Hello everyone, welcome to Cyber Inspiration Podcast. My name is Evgeny. I have been around cybersecurity for the last 20 years and I have a lot of experience working with a variety of cybersecurity vendors. My main work is vendor consulting and cybersecurity advisory for companies. As part of my passion in technology and cyber, I've been intrigued to learn how a company starts. I started the podcast to understand the thinking process and what motivated people to start their own company. This podcast is affiliated with Security Architecture Podcast.
I have Dan today from Ireland to tell me about his company and his motivation to start the journey. Dan, can you please tell me about yourself and what do you do?
Awesome. Well, first, thank you for having me on the podcast. I'm Dan Amiga. I'm the CTO and the co-founder of Ireland. I've been in this business for about 20 years, started at the Israeli Defense Forces, the intelligence, been in programming since I'm like 13 or 14 years old. Started a few cybersecurity companies, went through quite a few M&As. I'm sure we'll talk about that. And I'd say right in mid-2020, let's say peak of COVID, started Ireland together with Mike Fay. So Ireland is a Dallas, Texas-based for the go-to-market and Tel Aviv-centered for all things product and engineering. Ireland is an enterprise browser. It's a highly growing category. Super, super interesting. Basically, we took a fresh approach to not just security, but also IT and productivity. And we had this thought process where the most used application in business is the browser, but it was not designed for doing business, right? So I have this famous saying, which I get quoted all the time, and my mother and somebody that works for, you know, JP Morgan, they use the same browser. It doesn't make any sense, right? So what we did is we decided to build all the enterprise tools, if it's productivity tools, if it's IT tools, if it's security tools, right into the heart of the browser. And it took us on a very interesting journey, raised about $350 million from all the tier one venture capitals in the world, hundreds of customers, probably the number one or number two leading customers in every vertical from financial, healthcare, but also tech. So quite a journey for us. And we have about 220 now, I think, Islanders, which we're really proud in the culture and the company. Fun times for us.
And if everybody that's watching, listening to us right now, go to Security Architecture Season 4. You can learn everything about enterprise browsers, remote browsers, and definitely Ireland was there as well. So this is a very interesting story. And you basically, like the COVID companies, they would start doing the COVID and accelerate it. And I'm wondering, like you build many different things. What happened during COVID or before COVID that kind of trigger you? This is what I want to do.
I had a company that I started called Fireglass. Fireglass was a remote browser isolation company, or RBI. And we took it to market, and in 2017, it was acquired by Symantec. And in about early 2020, my contract ended with post the acquisition. But those past 7 or 8 years, even before starting the company, running it as an entrepreneur and then running it as post the acquisition, met hundreds of customers. And it's a good opportunity to interview these customers, not just sell your product, but also hear and understand what they need. And one of the things that I figured out really early on is that the most important thing in cybersecurity, being a cybersecurity guy, but what I realized is that the most important thing in cybersecurity is dramatic pause and user experience. So the idea where if you work for a bank or you work for a healthcare or you work for any corporate, and now you have to install in a good scenario, tens of different tools, right? Whether it's endpoint or proxies, you got to have two different phones. You got to work on VDI environment. If you're a contractor, they ship you a laptop, right? That's not a good experience. On the other hand, the alternative is if you don't work for a corporate, you go and buy a Mac, and that's it. There's no step two. So my thought process was, what if we can bring the end user experience to the corporate world, but keep the security standards in a very good level, right? So that was like the initial thought process.
So did you start asking customers during the interviews if there's something they want to do?
So I am more of a gut feeling kind of entrepreneur, right? And it was not really about explicitly asking customers, do you need a browser, right? It's more being in so many conversations, you feel the pain. So what I'm most interested about is the pain and not asking the customer on the solution. The pain was, I have 50 proxies, I've got this VDI, I've got these DLP tools injecting into the processes of all my processes on the OS. It was like, that's a real pain. Like I hate the current experience. And then I looked inside my previous company and I saw all these 25 years old engineers and nobody had anything installed on their laptops. They just had a dev environment. And I was like, these are 25 years old. Those 25 years old now working in all the big holding like these currently junior positions in all these Fortune 500s, right? They're going to be directors in 10 years. They're going to be VPs. They're going to run the business. They will want the best user experience possible, but they won't be able to compromise on security, right? So that was the first step. And then actually from a personal perspective, it was early 2022. My wife gave birth to our second daughter and she had these fantasies of we're now going to go on vacations because we never went on a honeymoon. We never went on many vacations. I was very focused on work, but I was unemployed and my contract finished with Symantec, which was acquired by Broadcom by that time. And we just gave birth to our second daughter. So now we can travel the world. But then COVID hit. And then you got to take it as an opportunity, right? Every downhill, you got to look at it as an opportunity, right? So we did the 1+1. Everybody's going to work remote. It's hybrid, right? So it's going to be remote first. Then people are going to come back to the office, which is hybrid. By the way, COVID did not make it happen, right? It just accelerated it. So for years, I was surprised coming to the state and seeing people are working from everywhere. They work from Starbucks. Not everybody goes to the office, even if it's 2019 or 2017. So bringing that consumer experience to corporate or Fortune 500 or 1000 was really lucrative for me. And the second thing is when we got acquired, Mike, who's my business partner, Mike Fay, was running the acquisition side from Symantec. And meeting Mike and seeing how an unbelievable leader he is in the go-to-market took me on what I call a company architecture journey. Like, what if I can partner with somebody like Mike, who's such a great visionary from a product side and go-to-market, and combine our strengths together? That's what I call company architecture, because software architecture, you can change easily. You go from monolith to microservices. Customer wants on-prem, he pays enough money, you do the on-prem. No, company architecture, you can change, right? So I started having these discussions with Mike, who was also available at the time. And I think our families actually pushed us to, you guys should go on this journey together. And that's the personal story on the origins of, you see the pain customers have, you find this amazing business partner. And I'd say the other thing is, when I look at the technical problems and solutions, it's like, what do I bring to the table? What's so special, right? I'm not the smartest guy in the world. What is my unfair advantage to build a company that builds the best product? And we can see today, Island has close to 100% win rate in the market. My thought process was, I've been already working on this open source project called Chromium, right? And I'm a browsers guy. That's what I've been doing for so many years, right? And I'm also really good in product and understanding end user experience. So if we can combine the technological knowledge and understanding what users want, I can create such a lucrative experience. And that's it then. And now we are where we are.
So what happened after? Did you went to raise money? Did you went to build a product?
Things happened really fast. We immediately understood that when you want to build a company that has impact in the market, and you first have to make a very strong impact, like your product has to deliver so much value, and then it becomes a big business, and then you can build more products. So we understood that to do that, we want to raise outside capital, because Mike and myself, we were fortunate enough to build the business and do well for ourselves. And we could actually fund the company for the first 2 years. But we really understood fast that, A, we need a lot of money. You need to build a large engineering force and a large go-to-market. And B, you want that money fast. Because when you have a good concept, a good idea, you want to lock it, right? And be the leader. So we went to raise money. I remember it was the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah in 2020, where the legendary Doug Leone from Sequoia called Mike and me and said, we want in. We knew it was a really good step to partner with Doug, and then some other legendary investors joined. So we didn't run to build the product. We first raised the money.
Was it easier to raise the money second time or the third time? What did it change from when you were raising the money like 10 years ago?
2020 was generally an easy time to raise money, if you remember. I think the difference is you can raise a lot of money and not dilute your employees. So you can create a really good cap table, which is good for the trajectory of the company. We took advantage of that. And again, you know, raising money is one, it's also who you raise money from, because you need real partners, especially in the growth stage. So I think we built a really healthy cap table, both with the Sequoias of the world and then some strategic investors later on. So I think that's one thing that was easier for us as second timers, to go to the best funds and raise money in a good deal for both sides, by the way. We didn't go crazy.
After you raise money, you need to hire a team. And this is interesting part, because hiring people is not easy, and hiring people in COVID is even harder, because you know it's going to be remote. And there's this idea of company culture. And the people I met so far from Ireland are very, very good people. Like the people I spoke with so far, amazing people. So talk to me. Did you guys have a chat with Mike? What type of people we want? How are we going to build a company culture?
Everybody, when they think about it, they go, I will only hire the best. I will not hire assholes. And there's the famous saying of, hey, you can't hire B players because they'll hire C players, right? Okay, easier said than done, right? Then you add COVID to that. Couldn't agree more. I think what was easier for us being second, third timers, etc., is we had more trust by folks, right? They trusted us. We had an initial team of folks that used to work for us in the past. And for new folks we needed to bring in, there was more trust on the experience. That's definitely something that played for us. Now, Mike and I, when we talked about this, we have this saying, we like to say, rich or proud, right? So never choose proud. And it's more to make it even make more sense. It's, do you want to be successful or do you want to be proud, right? And what stands behind it is we're building a new product. Nobody has ever built what we're building in the scale that we're building, right? The technology also changes really fast, right? People change really fast. Money, the economy, everything changes so fast. So you got to be humble. You got to listen, right? You got to be able to work with people. So I think what was our North Star is, A, bring as many smart people that we used to work with in the past, because we know we can trust them to work in collaboration and deliver. And B, for the new people that we had to bring from the outside, because technically I needed folks who were expert on the endpoint and many folks. This is a very large engineering team. It was always about, can you work with other people? Can you listen? Can you be humble? Can you go into the details? Because when in product execution, it's really about, do you really understand the intrinsics of how it works behind the scenes? If you don't, how can you build this? How can you build an amazing product for the long run? That's on the product side. In the go-to-market, Mike did this amazing job of bringing on many of the folks that we used to work with in the past. They bought into our experience. They bought into the journey. We really think we can build this very impactful company. And it's very important for us that there's good communication between people, especially when you build an international company, right? You got Israel and Dallas, right? The Texas to Tel Aviv not only created a great culture and people love working with each other, people are, it's some of the best, like some of the best people, like our chief revenue officer, chief marketing officer, our chief customer support, but Kenyon that you hired, our chief strategy officer. You can literally talk to subject matter expert in every position. And then there's what I call, it's like a wheel, So if you think about Israel works morning till late evening, right? And they build the product and support the customers. And then out they end and go to market starts in America, right? And they bring us the business and we have to keep. So that will and that culture is, I think, one of the most amazing things in the company.
Sounds like a hamster wheel in a way, no?
It is a hamster wheel. And if you think about companies, if something doesn't work, if the product isn't best in class, then you can sell. Then there's no need to build more product because you can sell the product, etc. Something is stuck. If you build the best product and sales doesn't work again, but the hamster wheel is actually a good metaphor because the business keeps going, the wheel keeps going, right? So I think it's a good metaphor. It's a challenging one.
So here's an interesting question. You as the guy with Mike is responsible that the wheel continue moving. There's many different tasks, maybe between engineering, between sales. What do you do? Like, how do you manage all these tasks? How do you prioritize?
Yes, that's a really good question. So first, as I said, when we started, we put a lot of thought on company architecture. And actually, another interesting story is October 2020, nobody flew, nobody got on a plane, right? You had two masks, you put two masks on. I took a flight to Texas and spent about 10, I think it was 10 days with Mike and Kenyon, just talking about like the company, right? This is the very early beginning, right? And I think I was by myself in that United plane. So we did put a lot of thought in how to make it scalable because it's a very growing business now. So the first thing we did is we decided to divide and conquer. So we have, I am all things product and engineering. And then Mike is all things go to market, fundraising, customers, etc. But we listen to each other. We respect each other. So a lot of the footprint on the product came from Mike. And sometimes customers, they want to see the CTO more than they want to see the CEO. And it's my job to make these customers successful. But in general, we have divided and conquered. The second thing is when people see Island, when we demo it to them, when we meet, it's not what they think. It's a very big platform. So think about AWS. You've got the data centers and you've got the services on top. Nobody buys the data centers. You buy the compute, the storage, the networking, right? Island is similar. Nobody needs a browser, but when you have so many different components on top, you can now reduce your other vendor footprint. That's what customers are interested about. To build it, we had to build a very large engineering force. And the way we did it is we used a system which I call Islands. So Islands are these small startup companies, and they have 4 to 6 or 7 engineers. And our product managers are super technical. So literally, I have no product managers with PM background. They're all very technical, whether they've done reverse engineering in their past, or they were engineers in their past, or security guys. And then we teach them product management. So now you create these autonomous units that can execute. To answer your question on time management, now my job is to train these people on how they become best in data protection, end user experience, browser isolation, etc. So I don't have to spend 50 hours a week with each one, but I can spend a few hours with each one coaching them on how to become better. It was hard in the beginning when you take super smart, positive people and you let them run, they do wonderful things. So my job is to get into the details where needed and hire the best people.
So you're almost like an API router. You need to make sure everybody's connected. It's a good idea to have.
I am a router, but I also add payload to the request coming in.
Next generation router.
Yes.
As a CTO, as you mentioned, you're often going to be on calls. And there's going to be a point where the customer says, ooh, if you had this feature, I will buy the product. Now you're like, I can tell you I have the feature and go develop it very quickly. Or I'll be honest and say, we don't have this feature, but if you buy the product, we'll develop it in the next amount of months. What's your approach? I call it like chicken and egg.
Yes. I think in my early years as entrepreneurs, I would tell them, yes, we're launching the feature next week, etc. And we go build it at nighttime. But what we do in Island is different, is we build for the long run. So yes, we can iterate super fast on features, but we don't want to build features. We want to build products. We want to be able to service our customers in a way that we save them a lot of money. We help them reduce a lot of the tools they have, or we give them more value. So what I will do is I will interview the customer, understand there is a real chance for a partnership there. And we most likely will go into A, execute on the business, deliver the product, because it is so wide and so deep. And to add to that, we didn't launch in 3 months or 6 months. We built the product for about 18 months before we actually started selling. So the product was actually ready to sell, right, when we went out of stealth. That allowed us to challenge customers and say, do you see that value? Yes, I will build more features. We can do a deal that's contingent. We can do a deal where we'll add more and more modules as you go along. But you have to be honest with the customer. And when you build that relationship of, I don't have it in the product today, but if I build it, I want to build something that is not just for you, it's for everybody else. And I'm going to support you. So I need a quarter, okay? But it will be the best capability you've ever seen. That builds the trust.
It's very important.
That also shows that the vendor is not like, I call it a dog, where somebody throws balls and the dog runs after the balls and you throw another ball and then suddenly you're not a company anymore. You're a feature builder versus on this big platform, I will do so much for you guys. And yes, if you partner with us, we will work with you to make sure you have a successful journey. And if you need more capabilities, we'll build them in the best way possible.
If you can go back 3 years ago, would you do anything differently?
To be honest, I think one of the things that I would improve is I would fire people faster, right? Because when you hire a lot of really smart people, you have 100% success rate in hiring smart people, but you don't have 100% success rate in culture fit and execution. And somebody might be best in his class and the best job, but when you come in and you work with these superstars and suddenly you're not best in class and there's all sorts of challenges. What we did in Ireland is because we have also very strong friendly relationships outside of work, you're used to give people more runway. And I think what I learned early on is if you have honest conversations with people and you tell them, maybe this is not the best place for you, I will give you a recommendation if you go somewhere else. I think it's a better move both for the company and the individuals. And we have seen great success when we departed from people and we stepped with new folks or somebody else stepped in. There was no culture fit to the company. In 1 second, you see how the whole business moves much faster. So I think culture, maintaining your culture, is also being honest with people. You can't assume you'll have 100% success rate when hiring. And I used to play basketball when I was young, so I like to use basketball analogies. And when somebody doesn't deliver on a team, it's your responsibility as the coach to let that person go. You might give him a chance, but if he can't, the other players want to win, right? And the fans want you to win. So I think that's one thing I would improve. But other than that, I think we built a wonderful culture. People are super happy to work with each other. One of the things I love about my job is you take these people in a certain place in their life. They can be 25 or 35 or 45. And then you go on a 7 or 10 years journey, right? At least with a lot of these people. So you're a big part of their life, of their adult life. How much impact did you have? Like, you got to make sure the impact that you're giving these people is something that you're happy with. So when I interview people, I always start with, tell me what you want to do. I already know you're smart. I know where you came from, right? I got a recommendation, close to 100% of our employees brought by friends, like from inside the company. Like, we don't do recruitment at all. And so we already know the guy is smart. And the reason he's talking to me is he already went through 2 technical interviews. So now it's, what do you want to do in 4 or 5 or 6 years? Do you want to run an R&D team? Do you want to be a founder? Do you want to be the best product guy? And then what do I do? What can I offer you in Ireland to make you go there? And if it makes sense, it's a hire. But sometimes it doesn't make sense and you gotta let people go. And I think every company needs to be really good at hiring fast and having honest conversations if it makes sense.
We're going to tap a bit to you personally right now. As every entrepreneur, we know it's not easy. There's good days, there's bad days, and as you mentioned, stuff moves so fast. What do you do when stuff hit the wall, when you just, something failed, you're not feeling well, it was a bad day? What do you do to get back on the horse and basically come back to full of energy and continue leading?
Yeah, I have a joke where when I talk with my fellow second-timers or third-timers, and I go, dude, I'm asking these first-time entrepreneurs, how are they doing? And everybody, oh, it goes great. We're growing 400x every 400% every quarter. And it's like, it's wonderful. It's coming together. It's a big world. And I was like, I never have a good day. It's always downhill. It's always hard. You close a quarter, the next quarter starts. You deliver the product, you got to... So I got to tell you, honestly, it's a very hard job. It's a very hard job. There are exceptions. If you're a feature company, you might have easier. You might code for a year and you have your feature and you can try to sell it and hope you get acquired. The journey we took on ourselves is a long journey and it's not easy, especially inventing a category. So everything is against you. What I do is I go to my managers. So my first few hires in the company were not engineers. And I remember going into this conversation with Doug from Sequoia, and Doug was like, where's all your engineers? I was like, no, I need to hire managers first, and then they'll hire engineers because we're building this wide company. So one of the side effects is I now have very strong management, both in Tel Aviv and in the States, people who I trust to consult with. So first, everything is hard, but you got these guys are best in the business. You know they'll end up climbing from whatever pitfall or whatever issue they have. And the second thing, one of the things with experience is you learn to take things into perspective. There's stuff you can control. There's the stuff you can control, right? And the other thing is, and this is interesting, I always say that in startup land, most of the things that seems bad are actually good for you. And I can give you many examples. I said firing an employee is a negative connotation, but then you hire somebody who's better and he excels at his job. You lose a POC, right? You lose a POC and from some reason, right? You get to learn so much. You get to make your product so much better. There's so many things in startup life that seems negative, while for the long run, you might not want to partner with the reseller or that VC, or it might not be the right time. So you got to learn how to take things into perspective, right? Talk honestly with your business partner, with your people, communicate the truth. We always were very transparent. And I think day to day, yeah, we get hit day to day, right? But for the long run, we're a very united group of talented people. We have a vision. We stand together. So I think you need to learn how to enjoy the journey. You've got people you like and you get hit.
So let's go deeper on the dark side, because you mentioned a couple of failures and how we can learn from there. So tell me more. We call it the dark side. Basically, it stuff that didn't work. As you mentioned, first time entrepreneurs telling you everything is paying, everything is working. But in reality, we know it's not the case. So tell me some stories, some horror stories, some bad POCs, some stuff that you happened that you didn't expect, but you hope learn from them and become a better person or a better company.
I think I have a few stories. So first, I'll talk about is actually product and engineering execution. And I have a saying, if you're an entrepreneur, you cannot lose on product execution. You just can't. So people, when they start, they're like, I'm going to build this thing. There's lots of smart people in the world. They can eventually build really good things. So if you get it wrong, it's not on the customer. It's not an external force. It's you who made a bad decision. You chose the wrong people to build it. You chose the wrong tech, etc. So I think we made some mistakes along the way, which we fixed, but we could have done it sooner. And the bad moment for me there was, how did I not get into the details like I like to do with everything and teach my management folks to do? So I think first, pay very careful attention if you have strategic projects and who's behind them. Did you make the right decision and take responsibility for? It's just stuff that product is something you got to get right. The good thing is we were successful delivering 95%. It's the 5% that kills me, right? But you get to improve every day. So when we have something successful or unsuccessful in the company, if it's a big event, I like to do a debrief, even if it's successful. So we don't just brief product downtime, missed deadlines, etc. We also brief on how we won on that customer. So I think that's that. I'd say the second point is bringing a product, and this was more a 2021 problem than it is a 2024 problem, but bringing a product to market, a new product, a new category, is always a challenge because there's no budget. People are skeptical. So I think the one thing that was a hard time for us was when we started, we expected more people to buy in, and people were very skeptical. And that made us like, maybe we should pause hiring for a few months. We hired so many people. The product is doing really well, but market perception and customers are not growing in the pace. And then we stopped hiring for 3 months. But that was just a moment in time, because then we saw this pipeline growing and customers like, okay, we get it. It was just a series of like perfect storm, a few bad calls. But when you stop something in a company, it's really hard to reignite it, to restart. And we fixed it, but it did cost us a few months of hiring. So I think for entrepreneurs and managers, you got to stop some things based on the business, but also be very aware that it takes time to restart. And then finally, Island today is really just numbers. I'd say it's about 20x, the entire ARR of the whole enterprise security market, enterprise browser security. So we sell 20x more of all the other vendors combined, and we get benchmarked and we get compared to everybody, right? Like customers are smart. They don't buy in the dark. They benchmark products heavily. And we were successful enough with just, I think, coming in with the best product and the best service to our customers. But I think because we have this, we hate to lose mentality. We sometimes put more effort in customers that they just wanted the product for free. Or maybe the CISO was an advisor to the other company, or they had a banking relationship with the other company. And that happened in our business, and that's fine. Relationship is a very big part of the business. It's not scalable. You can't build a business on relationships. But I think you got to accept that you can lose sometimes, and you got to focus on the big picture, right? So our loss ratio is close to none. But if I take something with me, is my investors and my future investors and my employees, they don't actually care if I lost the deal. They care on the bottom line. How many customers? What's my ARR, right? That's a good company. How many users are using my product? Yes, I can lose a deal here and there if somebody has a better relationship or gives a 90% discount. But at the end of the day, the market is huge. You have customers like you. That's what you're going to focus on, the ones who are serious in the buying process, and you can't build a business on relationships.
Great. Dan, thank you very much. Amazing show, amazing episode. I do have one question that kind of usually don't ask. It's a technical question, but in this case, I'm very wondering because I have my own vision. Is enterprise browser and network security technology or endpoint technology, basically when we say network security and endpoint security, where do we put enterprise browser in between? Where? Like, I have my own vision, but I want to see what you're thinking.
It's a good question. So when I envision the browser space or the enterprise browser space, it was very geared towards security. And Mike was like, Dan, this is not a security play. This is an enterprise play per se. This is the work OS, because this is what applications, Salesforce runs in the browser. 99% of what you run is web-based in the browser, right? By the way, we now support running also legacy workloads. We control fat apps, etc. So to answer your question, it's not an endpoint product or a network product, a network security. It's an enterprise product. And if because we've architected it the right way and we put in network controls and we put in endpoint controls, one of the things you can do is you can dramatically reduce your network stack and you can dramatically reduce your endpoint stack. You might choose not to do it, right? But it does give you that capability. And when you think about our product, think about that's the entry way to applications. VDI used to be that. If you're a contractor, the company issued laptop that they send you via mail, just sending it cost like $200, right? FedExing the laptop. You now get Island as your gateway, as your entry point. If you're an employee on a managed device and you used to have 5 portals and 50 security tools, now you have one entry point and maybe 5 security tools because we consolidated the stack. So I hope it makes sense.
We'll see. I'm wondering, I don't want to mention competition, but I will see what will happen and where certain big vendors are going to put it under. Just wondering under which category, because we have some shapes. And yeah, so just wondering.
Security vendors will put it in their security stack. Absolutely.
Yeah, but if it's network or endpoint, we're not sure, but we'll see. Just wondering.
We'll see. Yeah, will be interesting.
Great. Thank you very much. It was awesome. Everybody that's listening, thank you for tuning in. A lot of good information. If you're an entrepreneur, you probably learned a lot today. And if you're starting your own company, listen carefully. There's a lot of good tidbits here. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.